Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm the birthday boy.
Oh, it's Andrew Horowitz and it's his birthday.
Yes, it is, sir. Thank you so much. I hear the applause. Is that confetti? I see the confetti.
I could dub it in.
How are you?
If I had time to produce.
Yeah.
Good.
I changed my birthday this year to be on a Tuesday so that we could be together.
Sure, your wife is probably the happiest one in the group.
Yeah, well, she doesn't have to see me again.
You didn't have a birthday party?
I didn't, and I only received one gift, but I got like 6,000 Facebook happy
birthdays. Oh, yeah, that's what people do now. They just, as long as I say something on Facebook or I do something on Plaxo or whatever, you know, I'm good to go.
I answered every one of them.
With, where's my gift?
Yeah, I said thank you or something to every single one of them personally. Hmm. Thank you so much. Seriously.
Well, but I don't know what the point of it is.
Well, they took the time to say something to me and, you know, be reminded automatically by Facebook. And I thought I would very nicely give a personal thank you to everyone.
They did it because it came up on their browser.
Yeah, right.
Well, they were thinking about it. Yes. Oh, Plaxo just told me this guy's got a birthday. Oh, geez.
Well, they could have let it go. They didn't have to, like, write, hey, have a happy birthday.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I'm just a grump. Well, today is March 20th, by the way, for anyone out there listening to the show out of the blue.
Yeah, let me give you a little nostalgia. Back in March 20th, 2000. There I was waking up on my birthday morning and I looked at the TV, looked at a few things and I said, huh, look at that. I think I told you this before. That stock MicroStrategy that we really like must have had a split. I wasn't aware of that. What happened? And lo and behold, I call up and look at it and I say, I don't see any news on that. And I'm seeing actually some other things that don't look so good. Turns out that Michael Saylor, who is the president of and CEO of MicroStrategy, the service and the product. So it was a product that they would sell and a 5-year service contract. They booked all together at once as revenue. So they basically fast forwarded and brought up all of the 5 years of service into the first years of revenue, and it made the stock look really good.
Remember that?
Oh, that was painful.
Were you in the stock?
Yeah, I was in it personally. We had clients, but I will tell you one thing. This is maybe a silver lining to the story, but it's or maybe not. It's a tarnished lining to the story. Is that it was the best class action recovery I've ever seen in my life?
Yeah.
I lost like maybe $50,000 personally, and I think I got back $30,000.
Yeah, that's better than nothing.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's pretty
wild. Seriously, what do you usually get? You get, you know, 12 cents.
Yeah, you get nothing.
Nothing. I got like $30,000 back. That was unbelievable.
Huh.
So there you go.
So that was Apple's in the news.
It is? Apple, the company.
Yeah, you've
not
heard
the,
of them.
Not the fruit. Apple sold 3 million iPads the first weekend, and then lo and behold, it was discovered that there is a little problem with the heating unit. Or, no, I shouldn't say heating unit.
Yeah, there's a heating unit in the thing.
Well, actually,
we actually started off as a coffee warmer.
What's funny is that today the announcement comes out that Consumer Reports is looking into this heating problem. It's a heating problem when you're playing games. It seems that the Apple iPad 3, or it's called the new iPad, is not only hot a seller, but it's a hot actual product in terms of the heat it produces. 13 degrees hotter when playing certain games. Total of 116 degrees it gets to. Now, at first, the stock went down, which you would think would be logical because people would be concerned about this. Although, looking back in history, it doesn't really matter. Remember the antenna gate problem?
Yeah.
That was nothing. So the stock started climbing again and ended up 1% for the day. And it really struck me as, what is going on here? And I realized, not only is Apple iPad a computer device, but it is a portable space heater. So you're getting two things for your money here.
Two things for the price of one.
Yeah, and that's why the stock goes up. It must be.
Well, I don't think that this story has really hit the it hit the wires, so you would know about it. But
it hit the wires. The stock came down all the way, and then it came back up.
They call like a massive, 3 million recall or something, and you got a problem. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, they also issued a dividend, the first time in history that Apple
actually
issued a dividend. They came out with a Sunday night release, which is, you know, kind of the corporate. It was such a company stock market, you know, in circuit type of deal where they announced it Sunday night late, first thing Monday morning. They do this, you know, announcement from Cupertino that they can issue a dividend, about $2.50 per quarter, as well as a total of approximately $35 billion stock buyback, which means that they're not really spending any money because they're going to get it back in their dividends. But now they opened up the possibility for those mutual funds that can't buy any stocks that don't pay a dividend.
Ah, that's the trick.
Apple.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get that one. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a big thing. There's a lot of managers / mutual funds that cannot. They're prohibitive by basic design.
Yeah, but they're essentially the rules of the fund.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other thing is that there's a discussion that the processor that's being used, this quad-core processor that's being powering
– the hot one?
Hot one.
It's a hot processor.
Yeah, it really is. It's really – there was some – now, I don't have confirmation on this. This is something I want to ask you about, that the power, the extra power, the extra speed that's being used is being used to power the Retina display and some games, and that in benchmark testing – there really is no enhanced speed overall for other parts. It has the same speed as the iPad 2.
Hmm.
Have you heard about this?
No, not at all.
You think that's possible?
Yeah, very much.
Mm. So they are using this higher powered processor, which is obviously heating things up. And then on top of it, it's really being used to really punch out the resolution on the screen, four times the resolution of the previous version. And that's where a lot of the firepower is going to versus running the apps, let's say. Interesting.
Well, they do have a graphics processor in there, if I'm not mistaken. So it shouldn't be the CPU that's doing all that extra work.
Unless they didn't really increase and enhance the...
I don't. You know, who knows? I mean, somebody has to like break out the architecture of this thing and figure out what's going on, but... Something's, you know, you got a four core processor, so that thing is going to be hotter by nature, and then it gets stressed, cranked up to the max for some reason. I'm sure they have to do something about the screen with it. And I don't know, it's hard to say, but it says with certain games, so I'm assuming there's a high calculation game that turns the processor on max.
Yeah, it was something like hot-fired Angry Birds or something.
Yeah, Angry Birds. And then the thing starts, you know, picking up steam, and it starts to get hot. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Well, it'll probably open up a – if I know what happens with Apple products –
there's one group that's very happy about this.
Who's this?
Intel.
Oh,
hey-o.
Yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
You know, it'll probably open up a new cottage industry of, like, cooling units for iPads.
Oh, there like could
little,
be.
Yeah, you know, I'm telling you,
they have a little lap thing, and you just got a bunch of that crazy goo, that gel, that cold gel, it sucks up the heat.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Yep. So there was a story. We can get to some of the economics in a moment, but there's a story in this Monday's special edition of Investor's Business Daily. They put out a Monday morning special every Monday. It's not really special, I guess. It's Monday morning, and there was a couple of chart series that talked about the most competitive cities in the world. Competitive. And the number one, can you guess what the number one may be?
Well, technically it should be New York.
Yeah, New York. New York, out of 100, however they measured this, overall is New York, then London, Singapore, Paris, Hong Kong, Tokyo, and Zurich.
I don't see Paris being competitive.
They're competitive with – what
with
are they competitive
what?
With? Yeah, they're competitive with – I know, vacation time.
These are just major cities. Competitive. What are they talking about?
Hey, they're talking about human capital. I sent you some charts there. There's human capital, financial maturity, and economic strength. And then when you combine all this up and mash it all around, you come up with the number one.
Okay, I'm not seeing how that works. Human capital number one is Dublin.
Yeah,
well, New York's not even on this list. And then financial maturity, number one is Zurich. And then, well, they're all the same with the, they're all 100. So that, I don't think the financial maturity should even count since everyone's got the same rating.
Well, it's only this grouping that has this rating. And then, top 10 or whatever that is, or 7, right?
Well, they're all the 100. And then economic strength, New York is 4th. Tianjin and Shenzhen and Dalian and Doha, which I'm not getting, and Guangzhou and Shanghai, all Chinese cities. I mean those Guangzhou, Shanghai, Tianjin, and Shenzhen are all Chinese cities. I don't know what Doha, Qatar has got to do with anything.
Economic strength. Well, the economic strength due to the fact that they're all, you know, have so much money.
And what does human capital mean? Dublin's number one. What does that mean?
It means that the value of each individual and I guess maybe the pay scale. I don't know how Copenhagen got in there. I can go Dublin over Copenhagen any day. I mean, what's Copenhagen? What do they got there?
I'm not understanding this list at all.
It's one of those made up lists.
Yes, it's the thing I had go up my story about the editor sitting around a lunch table dreaming this crap up.
Right, and then you put some colors on a chart, nice bar charts. And you have a good line and something for us to talk about and totally grouse about.
Well, it's for me to grouse about. You seem to think it's...
Yeah, I bring it up, you grouse about it. That's kind of the way it goes.
you seem to think this is cool in some...
I like the colors.
...odd way. Yeah, the colors are pretty.
I like how there's four charts and they line up.
Yeah.
Well, I just thought that it was interesting that the... More importantly, I think the interesting part of all this was that the top economic strength, if there is really any validity to this survey, which we may be throwing right out, but if there was validity to this survey,
what is New York's economic strength? It's a service city. What are they? They don't make anything in New York.
Financial
city.
Center. Look at the finance. Look at the overalls. The overalls are all
okay.
Financial
it's a financial strong. Okay. Yeah. This needs debunking.
Well, let's look at just one of them. Let's look at the economic strength. It is interesting, though, that the top names, aside from you mentioned Doha and New York, are all Chinese. I thought that was interesting. And, you know, the average Chinese person or the average Chinese billionaire is like age, I don't know, 30-something.
Yeah, they made a lot of billionaires real fast.
Real fast. I mean, they churn them out fast. They turn out babies, it seems. I mean, they've got a lot of billionaires there. They have most in the world. And there were some studies done recently by, like, the Ferrari. The average person in China that buys, like, a Ferrari is, like, 32. and you know, anywhere else in the world, like in New York, it's like 45, 50, the average age of them buying.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. The one thing, though, that does bother me about China, I got to tell you, let's flesh this out a little bit, okay? Coach is a big seller in China. Yeah. Okay, I can go with that. I'm there. The problem is they also have an entire men's line of purses or bags
Merses.
For men. Yeah. What is the story? What I mean, do we have to really get that? Do we have to get to that level?
Well, apparently I haven't been to China recently because I've never seen Merses over there.
Oh, yeah, big.
I mean, you see them in Europe.
Yeah, fanny packs. I wear a fanny pack.
No, fanny packs are not the same.
Right. No, I you see the fanny packs. I don't see – you see a little bit of those over-the-shoulder bags like couriers. You know, like somebody's carrying some important
package. Yeah, but those are usually kind of sleazy and they're not made by Coach.
Right. No, Coach is big.
This is like a purse. This is a men's purse.
Yeah. Look it up. Look up men's Coach China. I bet you'll find it all over. Big, very big. It's very disturbing.
Men's. I'm going to do it now.
Yeah, let me see. I want to, you know, there's things like that you respect. I respect that in Japan that there are signs everywhere on public transportation. They have a picture of a cell phone with a gigantic red line through it. You're not allowed to talk. Or at least it's highly discouraged to talk on your cell phone when you're in public places. And I think that's very nice because nothing more obnoxious than sitting on a train and some guy yabba-dabbing behind you at a top voice. And I don't want to hear his conversation. I don't need to hear about this. I want to read my newspaper or whatever. Text, buddy. Text.
Yeah. Get with it.
And you got to be impressed in Japan with the letters they got going on that they could text. With
right.
All those,
yeah.
That's impressive. What are you finding?
Men's purses.
You see? I told you.
They're called premium bags.
You can't call them purses. You can't call them whatever else you call them.
So they outside of China, Coach believes that its biggest opportunity is in the men's premium bag. and small leather goods sector.
Okay. So they believe this. They believe that we're going to be walking. I mean, we have briefcases. Listen, whoever invented the tie and we all walk around with these schmucky looking silk things hanging from our neck. I mean, that's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. They balance the men's bodies need some sort of distraction.
and the mustache doesn't work. So we're going to have MRSAs. Is that what you're saying? We're going to have – this is coming. This is coming to America.
No. They've tried to get – we ridicule it so much that it doesn't seem to get – you know, wallets. If you can't get it in your wallet, give up on it. Here's a China eBay men's coach. It's a wallet, but it's one of those wallets with a big thing. It's big. It's not a wallet.
And these days of the smartphone, which one day will or will not have against your will e-payment ability – what do you need a whole? What do you need a briefcase for? What do you need even a big MRSA for?
Yeah,
you got the iPad. I mean, even though it may flame up everything else around you, I mean, you have the iPad. You have a smartphone of some sort or some kind of tablet. Maybe you have a laptop. I'll go with that. But I don't understand why you have to carry other things with you. What do you have? Keys? Some of these cars, you don't even need keys anymore. You have one of these crazy fobs.
Here's I'm stumbling, making me look at this crap. So I found some website called ctobags.com. It's like a Chinese, I don't know what it is. But I'll just read the description here. China eBay Nen fashion designer fake coach signature wallets.
Oh,
it's not a wallet because it's a huge thing. It's like a big, what are those things called?
It's
a clutch.
A mini suitcase?
It's a clutch.
Clutch.
It's a clutch. All right.
So you wouldn't be wearing that?
No.
All right.
Big news. Men have pockets. Everything consolidated in a bag. You got to dig through it. You ever go to the store and some old lady's got her big bag, and then you know she comes to the grocery line and the bill is $14.32,
and she starts digging.
She starts digging for the two cents.
What is that? I give a dollar.
The more they spend time digging for two cents. Yeah.
Exactly.
I've got it here. And she's digging and digging. You know, you're there for 15 minutes while she's digging. She finds one penny, puts it up on the thing, and then she starts digging again for the other penny. I'm thinking, do I have a penny? I can just put it on there and tell her to get going.
Well, that's why in Florida you have those pitcher penny things.
They have that in a lot of stores here, too. But this
Terrible. Anyway. Well, let me tell you some other big things that are going on. Not that everybody isn't just glued to their seats with talking about MRSAs, but you never know. I'm sure we'll get a ton of emails about that, actually.
I use a MRSA.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's very European.
By the way, I could see that in Ireland, men wearing kilts, no pockets. Okay, all right. Go with the MRSA. Maybe you want to even pack up the bagpipe in there or something. I don't know. But you know, you're right. We have pockets here. You have back pockets. You got front pockets. You know, sometimes even those shorts, the cargo pants, you have side pockets. Down here in Florida, you have what's called guayaberas, the shirts with like 17 pockets on them. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know what? You have plenty of opportunity for that. And worst comes to worst, you also have two hands you can hold something in. So, you know, when times get tough. Anyway, Greece, good news. Tonight, just tonight, they voted to approve the bailout money.
Oh.
It's a never-ending story.
Was over weeks ago, but it just keeps going.
Keeps on going. It's like the end. It's almost like Who Shot JR. It just keeps on going. You know what I'm saying? And the conversation keeps on going, and then the spin-off shows, and there's continuations of it, and so I'm sure that next week we'll have a vote on the approval of the vote or something of that nature, you know, to get this thing going. But they did approve it. And there's been some scuttlebutt about maybe more money or less money needed. And the IMF has come in saying, hey, it's not over yet and blah, blah. But it looks like it's all calm right now. Portugal's calm. Everybody's calm. The only thing we have to look at now is some of the economics are really what's happening. So tomorrow, important economics out of Germany, the PMI manufacturing numbers will be out. And that will be early in the morning. We'll see how that hits the tape and what happens. And you know, Germany's been pretty strong, but China has been just grumbling all sorts of weakness. And you have to wonder, even though they had low exports and their imports were better, how much that's really going to be seeing some impact in the German numbers over the next number of months. Mm. So we'll see.
Well,
but there's something going on. Did you notice that China, Asia seem to be slowing a bit, and the U.S. is kind of gaining some traction on the economy?
Yeah, it looks that way.
I just wonder if this really is the European scare that we had, if it's really hitting Asia rather than the U.S.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
I don't see the job numbers changing radically. I'm not liking the – we're not building new factories or anything. We're just kind of ramping back up to where we could have been in 2007.
It's like a big drop that has been filled with a bunch of dirt over it, which is okay.
Yeah.
I'll take the dirt. You know, it's fine. So back up, and maybe it doesn't need to have that problem. You know, the banks obviously are all in great shape, although Shira LaBear, the former chair of FDIC, is just all angry about the Fed stress tests and some of the numbers and some other blah, blah. But the bank stocks seem to be happy as clams.
Yeah.
And that's good. That's driving the market pretty nicely. Oracle beat views tonight after the hour of four it came out. And they beat views and had a much more upbeat tone, and the stock was up ever so slightly on those numbers. They beat by about 2 cents and had a decent outlook, which was good. And I think a lot of the movement from the big tech companies of late – remember, Oracle got smoked the last time they came out with earnings, just absolutely obliterated. And they did a lot of restructuring like Cisco did to try to cut down on employees, et cetera. And it seems to be, you know, they're holding back expenses, and their revenues are at least holding. Hmm. So that's good news.
Yeah, I think the tech sector is okay.
Yep. HP, on the other hand, is discussing – here we go. Ready? Drum roll. Combining – this is big. Combining their printer and personal computer business.
Yeah. Talk about a hard up – I mean, fine, but so what?
Like, woohoo! What does that mean? Seriously, what does that mean? Does that just mean that there's going to be job cuts? And what does it really mean? What is the point of that?
Just to consolidate marketing, from what I can tell.
It had to be consolidated to begin with. They sell the personal computers and the printers through the same outlets.
Yeah.
So what's the problem? What are they going to do?
Well, they had it split into two because they were gearing up to sell off the PC business. And so they, you know, set up shop to dump it. And the printer business was going to be on its own. And then they said, well, we're not going to do that anymore. So let's put them back together because we don't need all these redundant division, you know, these redundant departments, marketing.
So, like I said, it's gonna lead to just job cuts. That's basically the bottom line to this. Well, nothing changes otherwise.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I just don't see where the benefit is, except for the fact you cut some expenses, which is always good. But you still, I mean, HP just can't get any traction, just none, and especially after the devastating blow they got from Apple with their numbers recently. You know, with all the things that have gone on in the last quarter and comparatively, and the fact that they're all late to the party with everything else. It's, you know, really kind of amazing. As a matter of fact, when we look at a little while of our stock list, HP is still sliding since their earnings. I mean, they're down like 17% since we put that short on in the stock list. And that was the night of, right before the earnings announcement. I mean, 17%.
Yeah, well,
that's
I think
huge.
More interesting is, well, everything else is going up. We're not in a down market right now.
Right, everything's going up. And
so
you
to
see,
pull a short out of the rabbit out of a hat like that's pretty amazing. That means there's something desperately wrong with the company.
Yeah, really. Very dysfunctional. Very dysfunctional. So we'll see.
But it also means the possibility of a long-term buy.
It always seems to turn into that eventually.
It's going to bottom and bounce.
Right. Exactly. The hot housing market. There has been some, well, I shouldn't call it hot, but at least the housing numbers statistically are getting better.
That's good because they're just making it. I know in the area in the Palo Alto, Menlo Park area is really hot right now.
Is that because of the abundance of technology companies?
Yeah, and also because of they're finally doing IPOs again because these companies got big enough to do it. And also the Facebook IPO. Facebook, you know, everyone at Facebook, they think when that Facebook IPO comes off that the housing market in the Bay Area is going to skyrocket. Because the first thing these guys do is buy a big house.
Right, exactly. A crib.
Yeah, a crib.
Yeah, a crib. Yeah. We need a show like that, tech cribs. You know, everybody could show us the refrigerator, what's stocked in it or not. Show us the wiring in the walls for the technology guys, you know what I mean? All their wireless and all that good stuff and gadgetry. You should look at that. You should look into maybe doing that show.
Yeah, it'd be perfect for me.
You'd be the host.
I could talk in an Australian accent.
Oh, that'd be great. Here we are, the lifestyles of the rich and tech. Very nice. That wasn't probably good.
No, it wasn't good.
Can you do an Australian accent?
Not really.
Yeah. All right. Well, then we just have to sound dumb and American.
I can do the, why am I shouting?
Mate. All right. Listen, so the housing market is seems to be cooling a little bit. The NAHB numbers came out this week, and they're a little bit down. That's a survey.
We're going to take a look at the – these are the upcoming economic reports that we've been collecting. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to start with NAHB, which is the National Association of Home Builders, I believe, Housing Market Index. And it looks as though the 12-month trend is up, up, up.
Yep, the up, up. But the survey actually came in a little bit lower than expected. Now, again, what we're looking on here is the survey that's coming in. These are before the survey numbers come out or the reports come out. The survey, what the expectations are by analysts or economists and what the prior was. So the number came out on Monday, and it was actually light. Yeah. It came out a little bit lighter than expected, and housing stocks sold off ever so slightly, and markets were a little bit not thrilled about it. Not the most important number because it is a confidence number. They also do some revisions. The housing starts, though, that came out today were an important number, and that was actually lower than expected as well, although building permits skyrocketed. Building permits are kind of the, okay, we're going to break ground, we need to get a permit to do so and to build. So that's good, though, because that's past like mortgage applications or pending home sales and things like that. That's real, hey, we're getting the shovel in the ground.
Right. Who puts out the housing starts and building permits numbers?
That is, who is that? I think, is that the conference? I don't know who that is. I think it's the National Association of I don't know if they may be also the home builders. I don't know. We can look that up. I think it's a government stat, though.
Then you have the MBA mortgage applications, which seems to be slowly going down. That's because there's no money. They won't give you money.
Well, not only that, the big issue there is, again, it's an important number, but the way I see it is that it combines a lot of things, refis, new homes, you know, so who knows really what the mix is. You got to look at the number in depth to see really what's going on. Mm-hmm. That's coming out tomorrow, as well as existing home sales, which is kind of important on a raw basis. And there's high expectations for that number. These are annualized, by the way. Mm-hmm. And if they come in at these numbers, it's still pathetic.
Yeah,
I think the high was like 8 million.
Well, it seems to become a regional business now, so I'm not absolutely sure that these numbers are that valuable for. For regional economies, like California, I think would be a little different because it was extremely depressed. Nevada still is.
Arizona.
And so, I'm not.
Although Florida's on the uptick, but then again, you have to look at what's selling. Is it single family homes? Is it apartments? Is it multi family dwellings?
And what is it?
Is it rentals, condos? You know, what's the story?
What is
pricing?
It in Florida? What?
Oh, condos.
Oh.
Condos in Miami are selling like hotcakes.
Huh.
You have a lot of the Latin Americans that are coming over and, you know, using their money because the dollar is weak or has been weak and buying up apartments. Yep. Very hot. Very hot again. I mean, it's the old, I guess it's not really the Sun Belt discussion because you're not seeing that in Arizona and Texas as much, but you're seeing it here. What else do we got? Let's see. Initial claims, we know about that. Looking at the 350 number, that is a continuation. If it stays there, that's good. Continuing claims, we talked about, not that important. Consumer comfort, okay, out the window. Economic, we don't talk about. But we do have Friday, some important numbers. Now, there's a little bit of a difference here. Okay, so we have existing home sales, and then we have new home sales, right? Difference. So we have leading indicators, which are important. The leading indicators include some very important numbers. Now, one of the things about the leading indicators that I have to point out, we need to see a series of many months from now to get, I need to at least, to get comfortable because they changed the makeup, the composition of leading indicators recently.
Oh.
And of course, me, I'm thinking, what'd they do that for? What's up their sleeve on this? You know, what's happening? And so I want to see, I really can't comment because I just don't have a comfort level as to the changes and the comparatives with the new formulation. So it may look good, but you have to remember, I think, and the markets won't remember, if it looks really good or looks really bad, either one, or even comes in at the number, we have to look at, okay, well, what's the difference and what are we really looking at? So just as a point of reference.
But what kinds of things? Let me take a look and see if I can see.
We changed. I wrote a piece on this, and frankly, I don't remember. That was 3 weeks ago. It was like last month or the month before. I think it was last month they changed it. Or maybe it was February. I think February they changed it. We can look that up if you'd like, or you can look it up.
Is it the conference board?
It's the The leading indicators, LEI.
Right now it's average weekly hours, average weekly jobless, manufacturers' new orders, vendor performance, manufacturers' new orders.
I think it was the vendor performance that was changed. That was one of them.
Building permits, Standard & Poor's stock index, money supply, M2, interest rate spread, and index of consumer expectations.
Right. So if you think about what that is, all of those are, you know, outward looking. Stock market supposedly a leading indicator. Building permits, well, what's going to happen? Consumer confidence, what people expect. These are all outward looking leading indicators, you know, the leading indicators. So when we look at these not backward like you do with jobs claims and things of that nature, but you look at these forward. Okay, like what is going to potentially happen? It's not a crystal ball, but it's a future expectation of how things look.
Well, here's an article in Reuters that discusses what indicators are going to change in January.
It was January for the February number, right?
Yeah. Former real money supply will be replaced by a new leading credit index component, retroactive to 1990. The Institute for Supply Management Supplier Delivery Index will be discarded, and the ISM New Orders Index will take its place.
Right, so it's new orders, not what's been delivered. So it leads itself to a little bit more of a forward-looking.
Yeah.
But then again, the new orders actually mean things that are not guaranteed but are sure to actually happen. You know, so it's a little bit more shaky, that one.
Yeah, I think.
You know, on that one particular index or component.
Huh. Okay.
And there's one more. Anyway, so but the big thing is going to be new home sales. You know, the thing that the markets really want to see right now is we see the corporate profits have been better, balance sheets are better. We see that the employment situation is better. We see that confidence has been rising. We see a lot of good things. Now we need to see if the home market is finally bottoming out, both existing and new homes, and we'll see if that is actually going to pick up. And again, there's high expectations for this. Hmm. And it has been rising.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yep.
The 12-month trend is up on both of the month-to-month and adjusted yearly, or I guess adjusted.
Which one?
Well, there's month-to-month, and the other one is.
The month-to-month one is a new home sales. So there's a raw number, and then there's a percentage change.
Wow, okay, right. Okay, so the raw, so they'd both be going up, but the, yeah, the raw number's up, and the percentage change is up, and it's been up for 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
Barely.
All right. And dip down. The new home sales month over month dipped down a little bit last month. All right. So bond yields are rising. Have you seen this at all? Have you noticed this?
Yeah.
Okay. So what do they do? You know, the government needs to keep bond yields down. Now, they say it so that they can get the economy, you know, really moving and make sure there's a lot of money in the system and make it cost effective and blah, blah, blah. But what is really going on? Right. Well, what's really going on is the $16 trillion worth of debt outstanding. Right. And we need to make sure that, I don't know about you, but it's better to have a lower cost of your credit card interest rate than a higher cost. So the government needs to keep those rates down. Well, they're rising. So what do? They call in the kneecapper. He comes in today, Geithner, and he makes a presentation and says, you know what? We are actively refinancing and looking to keep our rates low by, you know, whether they can issue new bonds at lower costs or, when things come due. We know all this, but basically, you know, making the markets well aware of the fact that they are actively keeping the bond, rate cap on bonds. Gotta love that guy.
Yeah, he's got his nerve.
Not for much longer, but he's there. Let's see here. Goldman Sachs. We talked about the Goldman Sachs article, right? Did we talk about that at all?
No, we didn't. It's funny, though.
Go ahead.
But this is like a trend going on. I mean, we noticed this today with a story about somebody from Google. Guy quits Google and he starts slamming the company about one thing or another, saying it's not what it once was. They're losing their way. The guys that are running it they're too oriented toward Google Plus, which is a loser. And so the Goldman Sachs guy is the same thing. I can't remember his name, but he was a big shot executive, and he thinks that they're not serving their customers. They're just trying to make money.
Muppets. They call their customers Muppets.
Yeah, Muppets, idiot customers of Goldman Sachs.
What do they call them, Muppets, not puppets? What's Muppets?
So because they got the Goldman Sachs hand up their ass.
Oh, okay, I'll give you that. But do you think there's anything that was like, oh?
Oh, yes, big shocker.
Surprising.
Oh, everyone was really stunned by this letter. Didn't we know from the get-go in 2008 that Goldman was playing both sides of the fence on the derivatives market in the credit default swaps? They were selling those packaged up mortgage deals for, to suckers, and then at the same time, shorting them on the other end.
And not only that, the whole
this
idea
wasn't
that
news.
And the idea that Goldman Sachs is in it just for the money.
Yeah. Wow, that's a shocker.
And what else are they doing it for? Humankind, mankind, to educate the world. What are they doing it for otherwise? Peace on earth? I mean, do you think that they that if there was a Goldman Sachs beauty pageant, that they'd get up there and say, what is the most thing you want in life? And they'd say, oh, well, peace on earth. I mean, for God's sakes. Silly.
Yeah. It's a little disappointing.
Yeah.
I think, if they could find some illegal activity.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Racketeering. I mean, then you got something. But just grousing casually is not going to cut it.
But it was interesting that this guy's letter took about $2 billion off the stock value in a matter of 2 days.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I like that part of it.
Maybe he was shorting it.
It would have been a smart move.
There you go. Now we're talking. Now we're into really what's going on here, aren't we?
A dump and pump. A pump.
Yep.
It would be a dump and pump.
Yeah, dunk and skunk.
I don't know.
So solar stocks were all in a tizzy over the last number of weeks because the big bad U.S. was saying, hey, China, you know what? You guys are dumping. You're dumping these really low-cost solar deals here, and we're not going to take it anymore. We're tired of it. So finally today, there is a tariff placed on the Chinese solar-related companies. And guess what happened to those solar stocks?
You tell me.
They soared. it was a petty, much smaller than anticipated levy, tariff, fine. And you have stocks like Trina Solar up 7.5-8%, and Yingli up 10%, and then the U.S.-based ones, of course, get whacked because, basically what the U.S. did was allow for the dumping to go on with a small little, little pinch.
And it also – I think the real problem was the psychological one. If you have the U.S. government saying that the only reason the Chinese are killing the market is because they're dumping, even though we can't really prove it – essentially, but we're going to fine them a little bit of money. Just sends a message to investors that, hey, we can't compete with the Chinese the way the situation is. Let's get out of these stocks, these American companies, because it's a loser.
Right. Sends the wrong message. I agree with you. So
yeah, good work, government.
Yeah. So, once again, we come in with a very big, puff and go out with a little fizzle. So they didn't do much there. Big earthquake in Mexico today near Acapulco, 7.9. Did you see any news on this? I saw like
I actually did. There was some the PBS news hour. They had a lot of pictures. There's a lot of bridges fell down, and nobody got killed apparently, but a lot of things are broken. Buildings, chimneys fell off buildings, and things like that.
So I wonder if you have to look at a company like Cemex now, the cement company in Mexico, as a great opportunity.
Oh, I like it.
Let's put it on our list. Cemex. Let me look up the symbol now. Sometimes you don't. What is Cemex? CEMX? CEMX? Maybe CMX?
Good idea.
Cemex. Let's see here. Cemex. It is symbol CX, up 1.3% today. Looks like hell over time, though.
Let's see.
Oof. Yeah, from 5 years, it went from 40 down to 10. But up today on that. Let's see what it did today, though. Started up from the beginning. Gotta love that. Little ground shaking, and there you go.
So we're looking at a $7.78 stock.
Mm-hmm. It's traded a little bit less than average today. $7 billion company. Institutional owned about 49%. Let's see what else. Market cap, $7.5 billion. 52 million. It was down at $2 within the last 52 weeks.
Yeah, it was in, looks like September, October of last year.
$2. Yeah. I mean, wow. Well, it was $2, and wow, that's pretty impressive. And actually, it looks like if it goes above, well, 8.5, which is 10% from here, but if it goes above 8, you're going to see a breakout here on the upside, and 8.5, and then you're just goodbye. There it goes.
I think we should put it on the list.
CX. Let me get CX on the list here somewhere. All right, we'll get that on the list in a minute. All right, let's go back to a couple other hot stories, hot stories. Let's go back over here. All right, what else do I got? Romney. Well, who cares about Romney, right?
Good article in the New York Times about Romney.
What did it say?
Oh, it actually was an editorial in the back saying that Romney's more Catholic than he belongs in Rome because apparently American Catholics are not warming up to his, like, hyper-Catholic attitude. And so in the states that have a lot of Catholics, they're voting against him, which means a high Catholic state like Illinois will put Romney over the top easily.
And he did. He won.
Yeah.
Took it. Well, Paul Ryan,
guy like Santorum telling people how to live their lives. It's
what happened to the separation?
It's not even a separation of churches. The guy's a dick.
Okay. Well, I am not going to vote for a dick. How's that?
Yeah, well, good.
Paul Ryan, who I think is a relatively smart guy, but, you know, a little radical here and there, of course, he announced a plan today. I saw him on CNBC this morning talking about a new tax plan with two levels, just two tax brackets.
Yeah.
Just two levels.
Huh.
And when he asked about the plan, like what would be included, what he says, that hasn't been discussed yet. So, in other words, well, what happened? Well, we're going to have two levels. It's going to make it a lot easier. Well, what else? Well, that's basically it. The rest of it we have to work out. I'm thinking, I cannot believe he announced this. Nothing behind it other than two levels. How brilliant is that? That's like the 999 plan.
Yeah, we should go back to that. I forgot about that.
That guy came out of the news pretty fast after all that, huh?
The news is brutal.
And then just goes on to the next possible place. Have you seen municipal bonds lately?
No, I have not even followed them in the least. What's up?
They're dropping. Oh. It's interesting. If you look at the change recently, there was just a mad dash to buy yield. And, for example, the MUB, which is the Municipal Bond ETF. I sent you a little picture over there of that. Mm. If you take a look at that over the last several months, in December it was down at 106. It skyrocketed to 113 in the beginning of March and just dropped like a rock in the last, this month from 113 down to 107, like off a cliff.
Let me take a look. See at this. That? No, I'm just opening it now. Ooh. Yeah.
Now, one of the reasons is obviously that interest rates are possibly moving higher. The economy seems to be getting better. And all that does not play well for bonds. Now, one of the things that's interesting is that I guess at the beginning of this year, I had a lot of people say, hey, is it time to, take money out of stocks and put into bonds? And I said, you know what? The problem with bonds right now is that they're so low. Rates are so low that where are they going to go from here? Are they going to go to zero?
Yeah.
And if so, okay, great. But then what? And if you continue to go for safety at this point, bonds are really not the safest place if you're considering anything but holding them to
yield.
Yeah.
So you invest $100 in the bonds and they send you a bill for $10 every quarter.
Yeah, essentially that's what's happening.
To give them another $10 to hold the bond.
Yep. Let's see. So that was that. Let's see. That was kind of interesting. There's a new Corazine rule that may be coming into play, timely as it is, which says that exchange operators and futures industry regulators are basically putting together a rule that would restrict brokerage firms from what they could do with customer money in the wake of the MF Global situation with, I don't even know how much money is missing. It's still a gob of money. I mean, can you believe that they're just doing this now?
Yeah, it's astonishing to me.
It's like I don't even know what it's like. It's like the Three Stooges are running the regulatory departments of the world. It's like, you know, until something happens, it's like the stupid thing on the airplanes where, you can't carry any liquids now because somebody had liquids once. I mean, can we do this?
Talked about liquids, yes.
Oh, God. So now there's this new law that will be coming, and you know, who knows what kind of restrictions that's going to put on, cost these companies so much more money, because obviously they'll always go too far with the regulations versus not. Let's see what else we got. Gold and silver getting smoked?
I don't know. Are they getting smoked? Gold's still hanging in there at 1655, up 8.
Well, that was
today.
Then. Yeah. So look up GLD. Symbol for GLD. It was down 1% on the day again. And if you look at the chart of this thing, you know, like kind of year to date of it, I mean, it's been from 175 down to 160. So you know, that's 10%. Look at silver. Silver is down, I think, 4% today. Look at SLV, which is an ETF that tracks it. Let's see what it is. Down 2.5% today. Excuse me. And year to date, let's see, it was high as 45 a year ago. Now it's 31.
Yeah, that's 46. That ETF was not a good idea.
Yep. So that's silver. Silver was high as 36 this year to 31. So it's put $5. It's 12%. So it's kind of it's working a little bit backwards. It's not the safety valve everybody thought it was. But you know what?
You don't need a safety valve with the market going up like this.
When you have the government pumping in all sorts of money into the market, you don't need a safety valve.
No.
Right? You just kind of hold your nose and do it until it changes. I think I told you about this trigger point research. I sent you the highlight reel,
mm-hmm.
And kind of had we had one today. Actually, we put out an alert today for SIMO, S-I-M-O, which is a Silicon Motion, and basically they make chips for portable devices, etc. Dropped on some earnings last quarter, but based out, and we first started seeing it and put an alert out at 18, and then we put one out at 20, and I think what did it close today at 21 and change. 21 change.
It looks like.
So, really nice. We don't have that one on there. But the other ones we have, we shorted Green Mountain for 20%. Long on. Yep. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Anyway, point is that if you want to have access to this, we're going to keep the two-week trial open until 3/31, the end of this month. You can get a two-week trial free of Trigger Point alerts. You get all the bells and whistles and the alerts that come either in a text or in an email and on the site over at Trigger Point Research. So, hurry, hurry. Time's a-wasting.
So silver, I'm looking at silver's chart.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't realize it was at $9 in January. No, December, October, maybe September, October of 08.
Mm-hmm. And then it went berserk when all the money flooded into the markets.
Yeah, it started really skyrocketing. It looks like it should be selling for about $17.50.
How do you figure that?
I'm just looking at the chart. There's like a plateau.
Oh, yeah. There's a spike.
I mean, it goes up, and then it skyrockets, and then it goes bouncing around like a – looks like the Mount Everest. And then you – but if you look back in January in 08 and then this little flat period in early part of 2010, it just sits around $17-$18, and it just looks comfortable there.
One of the things that happened was that there was this silver euphoria that hit within the last year, and everybody was talking about it. I think I told you about this. I mean, everybody was talking about silver, silver, silver. They went like, uh-oh, too many people talking about this. Seriously, that's a sign. When you hear everybody talking about something,
absolutely.
Run.
It's wrong.
You know, it's wrong.
Head for the exits.
It may be right for a while.
Yeah,
it turns out to be wrong.
Yeah, but then you have a timing issue. You got to get in and get out somehow. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So that's always the issue, is the timing. So silver, kind of peaked at, I think, at 45, I think it was.
So it looks
is
like
that right?
Or more.
45?
More than 45.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it was heading up to 50. I remember that very distinctly. And we kind of put an option on their put, and we sold short, and it was
48.35.
Yeah, and I put out a couple of blog posts on that, and people were, like, ripping the hell out of me. And, again, that just gave me more gusto to go even shorter.
Oh, they were ripping you for shorting it?
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, once you see – the fanatics come out when you talk about any direction, buying or selling. And when you're again, when they start really ripping you, you know things are not good. You got to keep on, you know, you got to stay fast to what you're doing and probably hit it even harder. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, no, it makes sense to me.
When the, you know, they, when, especially when they start name calling. Oh boy. You know, when they start name calling or bringing your family into it or something like that, you know, you're just like, seriously, I'm like, you just, you hit it harder. So anyway, natural gas related stocks are going up, up, up. Take a look at the chart of CLNE. Now, this is the company, Clean Energy, that makes the basically what they're in business. There's a couple different things. But one of the things they do is they make if you think about a gas station and the pumps in the gas station.
Yeah.
They basically are the company that makes those for the natural gas business. Now, natural gas keeps on going down in price. It just seems to be never ending on the bottom. And this company, which is T. Boone Pickens, one of his big claim to fame, is, you know, is starting to really show some promise here. One of the big things is that China
chart.
Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that lovely?
Looks like
we picked it up.
Looks like the ski ramp for one of those ski jumps.
Yep. And we actually, if you notice that it hit, I think last week we actually called a buy in at 1910. We hit the 1910s at the low on the overnight trade. I bought every share that was available, which wasn't that many, but it was enough to be nice at 1910.
Yeah, it would have been nicer at 10 or 10 bucks a share back in September, October.
And then the other one is WPRT. They make the engines, the natural gas engines for trucks. Now, with China really constantly talking about their LNG and shale practices that are going to be advancing for the next, I think they said 5 years. They have a five-year plan. Well, they're going to have to get filling stations and engines and things like that. So these are kind of the two companies that we would like for that. Looks nice, right?
I'm trying to bring up a chart. It's not coming up.
WPRT.
No, I have the company here. It's just for some reason. It's not. There it is. Wow. This is even better.
Yeah.
This thing just kind of marches. Of course, it's a little jaggier. But, yeah. What's the numbers look like on this thing?
This one's a little bit smaller.
Yeah, it's got no earnings.
Yeah, no, I understand that, but they will. That's the promise. At least that's what they say. Of Ken, because there's, you know, you still have to have a business out there that's going to you know, and a commitment.
Is there a company that does? Because it seems to me, I mean, natural gas engines are one thing, but there must be a company that does conversions. Because most natural gas cars or liquid natural gas cars that get special permits to go through the carpool lanes in California, those are all converted engines. You take your regular old car, your clunker, and you take it to a shop. It costs, I think, about $2,500 maybe to get the thing upgraded. I've heard higher numbers, but I've also researched it a little bit. You can get an upgrade. And, of course, then they have to fit in the tank of gas into your trunk and all the rest of it. And it seems kind of dangerous to have a tank of gas like that. But whatever. There must be some companies that do that are publicly traded. That would be interesting.
Let's see. There's a company called Omnitech. I don't know if they're publicly traded. I don't think so. I'll have to look. Omnitech. O-M-N-I... E-K. These are natural gas conversions and parts. Actually, the company
Omnitech
that would be
engineering.
That. Yeah.
It looks like it's an over-the-counter bulletin board stock. It sells for $5. Yeah, it's got to be it.
Maybe.
Let me take a look.
The company that I'm thinking of is Chart Industries.
Yeah, this is Omnitech Engineering. It develops natural gas engines and advanced engine management systems, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, there's a little company, $5.
GTLS, Chart Industries. Now, these guys make the parts. So if you're going to do the conversion, they would have a lot of the parts.
Chart Industries.
Yeah. I don't think their chart looks as good.
No.
It looks okay, but it's not as good. But they're one of the ones that makes a lot of the parts to go into these things.
The chart for Omnitech is kind of interesting.
What's the symbol?
It's basically a 50-cent stock.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
well,
you
could have
bought it
right up your alley.
Yeah, exactly. It's all I can afford. So you get this thing. You could have got it 50 cents, but then it went up and it kind of froze solid at about $2, and it just sat there. Actually, between $2 and $3, it just kind of floated, and then it kind of dropped below $2 and took off. Just, with a couple of, especially with a large, lot of volume in the, it's like the end of April, and it pumped the thing way up to $6, and then it set
April,
back down.
April, you mean March? February.
Yeah, February, it could be. And
yeah. Well, April hasn't happened yet. Hello.
What?
April hasn't happened yet.
No, I've got calendar dyslexia. Yeah, it'd be February. So it's
now
February,
this is a one-year chart. No, let me just say something. A one-year chart. 1 year?
Yeah.
Do you know what the percent gain on this stock is in 1 year? Percent gain in 1 year.
What?
2,100%.
That's good.
I think it's all right. It's a start. Start. Let me go back further. 5 years. What is that? Does it even go that far?
No, no.
Yeah, that's, oh, it's better. 5 years is better.
I can't. 5 years.
3,300%.
Oh, well.
Oh, this goes back to January 21st of 2011.
Up for nothing.
Since inception.
You can see that in 08, 09, it had another peak. Then it kind of settled back down. So this thing is up and down. So this is might be a good short.
It looks like it's trailing down. I don't know when earnings are coming out. I don't know anything about this company, but it's interesting nonetheless.
OMTKO, it's a bulletin board stock, so it's going to be light.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be able to show up on our system, but
well, let's find out. Let's put it on. I'll put it on.
Well, actually, it must be able to. What's the symbol?
OMTK.
All right, let's go to the here. All right, let me copy this range.
Now you might need the .ob. I don't know. Which stands for something. I'm not sure what. It's usually like an exchange or something, isn't it?
Okay, wait. What does it give me again?
OMTK.
OMTK. OMTK. Enter. Loading. Yep, it's there.
Yeah. 550.
550.
All right.
OmniTech Engineering. All right, you want to go to the stocks?
Yeah, might as well.
Might as well. Things are cooking along. Dow Jones is actually lagging this year compared to the S&P and the NASDAQ, but they're all doing kind of well, considering. The world is doing well, actually. But we're still holding on to some great gains on some of our early positions. KLA-Tencor, 20% up. Acorn up 13. Monster, 27%.
Yeah.
Still have a gain on ProShares Ultra Oil by just a hair. I think it was almost stopped out there. Right. I got to look at if it was stopped out. This is obviously just a game. We don't recommend or suggest or even have any idea that you should be buying or selling any of the things that we talk about. It is only a game, and you should seek professional financial advice before you do, in fact, invest in any security. There is risk of loss of principal in any kind of investing. So just keep that in mind when we talk about this. Icon Enterprises, one of your favorites, up 14%. Let's see. Everything else is looking pretty good here. Shutterfly up 12%. Pete's Coffee up slightly. Carver Ceramics, which you didn't like, up 21%. Cliff Short is still hanging in there, not doing much. Hopog is up 10%.
Hopog. Yes, Hopog. Up 10, finally.
Bank of America, up 22% since you bought that, and that was 1 month ago.
Yeah. I think that thing's going to go back up and take its rightful place.
Rightful place in the king of, as the Bank of America.
By the way, I hate that bank. I hate it. I think the bank is a sleazeball operation.
When has that stopped investors?
Apparently never.
Never. You're not doing well on your medical marijuana buy. It's not as high as it was.
You're the one that talked me into that.
Well, you still
I'm
got
blaming
a 2 cent
you now.
Stop going.
I'm leaving it go because this thing could skyrocket, which is
never
one
know.
Blink. All Obama has to say is, you know, I've changed my mind about the lies that I, you know, propagated in the 2008 election. I said that, you know, we're going to stop harassing the medical marijuana people, then he does just the opposite, makes it worse for them. If he goes back and says something, this stock is boom.
Right. I mean, during an address, he could be with Biden and say, hey, Biden, do me a favor. Can you pass the spleef? I mean, that's it. It's all over, right? It's going to move right up.
This thing is a possible, you know, when it keeps going down, I'm thinking of buying some.
I like it. It's low. It's 5 cents a share. Vivus, that's your diet drug. It's just doing nothing there. Cronus hanging in there tough. I am saying that, hey, you know what? The weakness in the U.S. government's ability to do anything on the solars. Let's buy one. Let's try again, because we tried it once before. Let's try again and pick up a Chinese solar company. We actually did it last time, and we were stopped out back in February for a little bit of a loss, 8% loss. We bought it back then at $9.54. It's currently at $8.38, so maybe it's a time to pick this up again. We'll see.
Yeah.
And you have Omnitech Engineering, the granddaddy of bulletin board natural gas-related conversion companies that is up 3,300% since inception.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Well, there was another one we mentioned early in the show I thought you were looking at. What was it? I was thinking it was an idea of dropping it in. Yeah.
Solars? No, we said solar.
I had to look at the list of stuff. Where did it come into play? Somebody's listening. No, it's such and such. It wasn't Oracle. He talked about U.S. bonds, Goldman Sachs.
It wasn't that.
Saudi.
The municipal bonds?
It's too risky.
It wouldn't be that.
It was
you said it was a good short. Something was a good short, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if I said that, then I don't want to do anything because I don't think this is a shorting market.
Yeah, you said a mouthful there. I mean, even today, the markets were down 80 bips, and they came back to down 30, 35 bips. And already in the overnight, I saw that the futures were moving higher again. It's the unlimited bid right now of just buying in no matter what. Good news, bad news, it doesn't matter. I can tell you several stocks that were just down and just had a look at them. You're like, wow, oil was down today. But, you know, meanwhile, oil stocks are down as well pretty hard. But you see a little bit of a blip up, they're going to just take off again. You know, so that's kind of the market we're in right now. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, it could last for a while. You don't know.
Yep, sure can. Last time the markets, the NASDAQ was up 100% when the Fed and the government were behind the markets. And the government is behind the markets.
Yeah. I'm looking at my list of things I've been kind of following. I'm not seeing anything I'd want to. Except I don't want to just clog up the
We have a lot of stocks on. A lot of stocks on here. And that's good. That means that we're doing well. If you think about it, if our little game here is, you know, we have stuff for the last 4 or 5 months. It was a time when couldn't hold on a week.
No, they would be bounced off real quick. And everything was dead empty.
Right. And there was nothing going on. I think there's a preponderance of green on there right now. And by the way, anybody that wants to check these out, you go over to DH Unplugged. And all you have to do is click on the bottom of one of the posts that says weekly stock ideas. And you'll get this great little Google spreadsheet that's live and actively during market hours, updating the changes from when we talk about it. And, of course, we only buy things in the morning at 9:30 on the open, or short things, or if we say differently. And so we're kind of limited to Wednesday buys only, which actually turns out to be a good strategy right now. Just buy on Wednesdays.
Yeah. That's funny.
I wonder what would happen if we did this on a Monday or something. But anyway, and that's all I have, sir. And my birthday is almost over. It's very sad.
Well, happy birthday to you. And people can send – you can go to any of the Horowitz websites and find out – beg them for a post office box or something. You can send them gifts.
Oh, gifts. Yeah. Love them. Love them.
And that'll do it until next Tuesday. We'll talk then and have a nice birthday rest of the day.
Thank you, sir. See you soon.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.